Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi Josh, how you doing?
Thought we were going to go right into the trailer we were going to play.
Well, we will. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about Adam and Eve or not before
we do that.
Well,
I figured we'd do that after, but okay. Let's talk Adam and Eve then, since you already brought it up.
I already brought it up. It's back!
It's backside, and something to put in your backside at adamandeve.com. You go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC, and you get not one, not two, but three.
Okay. Hold
I'm there. Sorry. The promo's just ingrained in me.
I know. Go to Adam and Eve. I just want to do it at a speed where people can understand. So
the whole Colonel Barker thing doesn't work?
Go to adamandeve.com. When you're ready to check out, throw in the promo code STATIC. One, you give a little bit to us, so you get a nice warm feeling inside.
And the more you spend, the more we get.
Exactly. And so, yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. But anyway, we get a little cut of whatever you spend, and you get that nice warm feeling inside from a 50% off any of your adult toys, lingerie,
single
movie,
item. Any
single item. Plus, you get three free adult DVDs.
Correct.
Do they get to choose them?
No.
Or no? Okay.
No.
Okay.
It's a random thing.
I wasn't sure. So it's the three random three adult DVDs to help you spank it, however you spank it. You get a mystery gift.
All right.
And you can always email us and let us know what that is, because I love hearing what people get.
And free shipping.
Free, that's right.
I saw you kind of stumbling. It's been a while. Like your brain was going, one more thing, one more
My
thing,
brain
one
is
more
going,
thing.
There's something else there, there's something. Yeah. Free shipping within the U.S.
Correct.
And there you go.
Using this promo code, static at adamandeve.com.
Static.
Now to our topic.
I want it. You probably think I'm beautiful, Dr. Roberts, but I'm not.
I want it.
My nose is 0.2 millimeters too narrow, and my cheekbones are 0.4 millimeters too high.
I want it too.
I do television commercials. They want a certain look.
I did surgery on several girls a few months back, commercial actresses, and there have been some suicides.
You don't know what's going on. This is more than commercials. They're killing all the girls that are perfect.
DMI measured some girls for possible surgery. We were conducting an experiment.
Hi, I'm Cindy. I'm the perfect female type, 18 to 25.
Here you see a typical computer model being made.
Hi, I'm Cindy. I'm the perfect female type, 18 to 25.
What have you got me mixed up in? I have a right to know if somebody's trying to kill me.
Looker. Yeah.
That is a trailer for the 1981 Michael Crichton written and directed film Looker.
And still a very good film.
Until
the end.
Well, okay, not even so much the end, but the end of the theatrical cut. There is no director's cut, but the TV version actually includes 15 minutes of additional scenes that explain why the cop decides to help them at the end, even though he's in the pocket of James Coburn, why no one thinks this is weird that's in the audience watching it live, and what the whole deal with the presidential candidate that they CGI'd is all about. Basically, all these things are left hanging at the end of the theatrical cut.
Right.
The network TV version adds 15 minutes of scenes that make the film make more sense, yet those are not on the DVD. I don't understand that.
Really?
You only see those on the old syndicated TV version.
I don't remember the old
TV
version.
We'll be talking
about
syndication next week.
Exactly. So, anyway, Looker was an interesting film, at least, and what's funny is, in 1981, the big selling sci-fi point of the movie is the fact that they're able to scan these people into the computer, and you end up with, she introduced herself as Cindy, the perfect female
and
type.
That actually was CGI, 1981. Right. They, on the commentary, he explains they spent a lot of money to not just, make her act as the CGI model. That was actual CGI.
Right.
And it looks not exactly photorealistic by today's standards, but in 81.
It looks like a very, very well done Amiga.
That's probably what it was done on.
It was probably, yeah.
He doesn't mention on the commentary what computer they used, but I would not be surprised if it was an Amiga. Because it's kind of got that kind of haze to it that Amiga animation always had.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you're wrong on that.
No.
It's probably a good guess.
Yeah. But anyway, what was funny to me was I was looking around online after we looked at that, and we found this, which I thought was hilarious.
Hello and welcome to TNG Visual Effects. My name is Amber. I will be teaching you a little bit about our process of creating a digital character. Here at TNG, we create 3D models using the latest 3D scanning technology. In just a few minutes, we scan this Royal Canadian Mounted Policeman at our newest office in Vancouver. Our team of talented artists transforms the scan data into a ready-to-use 3D character for film, television, or video games. Now you are viewing the grayscale 3D model, showing the details of the geometry. This is the information we get from a 3D scan. The customizable wireframe shows the topology layout. The topology is significant for showing the construction of the 3D model at its basic form. Using high-resolution, cross-polarized reference photos enables us to provide 3D models with high-quality texture maps. We customize the UV layouts to meet your specifications. After all this, the model is ready to be animated. I hope you enjoyed this short introduction to the TNG Visual Effects 3D character creation process. Call us to discuss your next project. Thanks for watching.
Now, see, the interesting thing about that is that's new.
Yeah.
And yet Michael Crichton envisioned that in 1981.
Actually, I think he wrote Looker a few years earlier.
Yes, he probably wrote that in 79 or 80,
yeah.
Probably. But the whole point of this episode is these movies that were really science fiction and now have been actually surpassed by reality. And Looker is a perfect example of that.
I know.
If you take out the conspiracy and murder plot.
I always like going back and watching the cars in Blade Runner, the flying cars.
The spinners.
Yeah, the spinners, because, you know, now we have so much better flying cars. Where the fuck are my flying cars? I want my flying cars. Anyway, sorry, side rant.
Idiot. But like a movie like Looker, for those that don't know and you couldn't 100% get it from the trailer, the movie is about a company that they use plastic surgery to create what they consider the perfect woman. Perfect measurements, everything. And then the computer scans them, and then the computer can make them do anything that they want. Anything, you know, they don't have to worry about the girl getting tired or being sore from bending too much or anything. So for TV commercials, they can have her on any backdrop, like insert her green screen style into anywhere. And the girl doesn't exist anymore, and so they kill the real model, so she can't go get other work, so they have the exclusivity on the perfect TV model. And of course, it's a murder conspiracy, and the plastic surgeon starts noticing all his patients are dying and getting involved, and there's a corrupt cop that changes his heart for no reason whatsoever in the theatrical cut, as I mentioned, and things like that. And it's not a bad little flick, but in 1981, can you imagine? I didn't see this till I was an adult. Can you imagine how sci-fi that would seem rather than watching it today when that's not sci-fi anymore? Again, taking out the murder plot, Scott?
Yeah, no, I remember working, or not working, blah, blah, blah. It's been a long day. Give me a break.
You woke up an hour ago.
Yeah, I know. But I did work overnight. I didn't go to bed till like 11. But anyway, I remember watching Looker with my dad when I was relatively young.
Probably or TV.
Video or either that, or we caught it on HBO or something like that. But it wasn't. It may not have been 1981, but it certainly wasn't past 1983.
Well, because if it was in theaters in 81, it wouldn't have hit HBO till 83 at least. Because
yeah.
they usually had a good year and a half lead time on that stuff.
Way back when.
Yeah.
As opposed to it got out of the theaters yesterday. DVDs on the shelf.
Pretty much nowadays. But
anyway, it's Yeah, and I remember watching it and going, "This will never happen.
Total science fiction. Yeah, huh?
there's no way that you can just aim some pretty lights at somebody and end up with this computer actor." And then I played L.A. Noire, and
as an adult,
and you know, some bits of Mass Effect, and you watch that movie, The Polar Express, and you're like, "Oh my god." It happened.
Well, or even that same kind of thing has happened with Andy Serkis. Is that his name?
Andy Serkis.
Smeagol.
He played Gollum, yeah.
Or even, and I know this is not a good example, but when you see the 3D modeling compared to the actor, Jar Jar Binks. You know, it was an exact replica of what the actor was doing on the set.
Yep.
Or on the grid, really. And this has become fact, and that's kind of creepy that things... Now, a movie like Looker, especially when you listen to the commentary, Looker was made as a warning. As a warning about giving the computer too much power. About taking people out of the process and letting the computer do everything. And no one listened to that warning, did we? We all said, "Nah, that's not a warning. That's a challenge."
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that a little scary, though?
No.
I mean, not being a smartass, that's not scary that he meant Looker as a warning and everyone ignored it?
I don't think it was a valid warning.
Why? Because it was a decent flick?
Well, it was a decent flick, but I don't think it was a valid warning.
You got to see Susan Day's boobies? Which is never a bad thing.
It's never a bad thing. Susan Day does look good in that movie.
But
even though her nose is 0.2 millimeters too thin or whatever it is.
But you've also got something like Network. Network was absolutely a warning
yep.
of if TV is left unchecked, this is the place you do not want to be at. And or when you get to this point, you realize that, no, here it was by the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that... To me, Network was another one of those films that when this was written, it was science fiction. It might not have taken place in the future, might not have had androids or time travel or anything, but I don't think I'm off base saying that Network was science fiction. Really?
Yeah, I mean, back when Network hit theaters...
76 or 77.
76 or 77, we were at the end of the Cronkite era.
Not even. He was still on the air. I don't even think we were even at the end of the Cronkite era yet.
Well, we were approaching the end of the Cronkite era because he had been on the air for a long, long time. But to see it change like that out of, you know, seemingly within a decade or so. But yeah, when it came out, people were like, "No, there's no way that it's going to be like that. News is way too staunchy and
serious
and there's no way that
just like Looker, we have surpassed the Network's warning.
Yep.
With one exception, we still haven't killed somebody on air for having low ratings yet
that we know of.
True.
Glenn Beck, they're coming for you.
Yeah, because Glenn Beck has those ratings anymore.
That's what I'm saying. His ratings have dropped.
He's not even on TV anymore.
I know.
He's on the internet.
That's what I'm saying.
But to me, it's a little bit scary when you think of something like Network as a warning that was completely left unheeded. That doesn't bother you some that as a society we don't listen to these... They're almost like soothsayers, people like Michael Crichton and Patty Chayefsky and David Cronenberg and people like that, that they kind of saw where things were going and they said, "I don't want to go there, so I'm going to warn people," yet everyone ignored them. That doesn't bother you on a non-smartass level?
No, because we didn't see it as a warning at the time. We saw it as fiction, something that could never, ever happen.
That's probably the best kind of warning.
Not only can this never happen,
you don't want it to happen.
But again, we're looking back and going, "Oh my God, these people were absolute visionaries," because we're able to look back and see what's happened. If you can't look back and see what's happened, then you don't heed the warning. There are examples of this throughout human history of us looking back and going, oh my God, they're such soothsayers and amazing that they were able to pick this out. We should have listened. Nobody ever goes, whoo, thank God we listened to that.
Well, because, I mean, what's funny is go find and read some reviews of Network when it was new. When you had no looking back at it.
Got really bad reviews, didn't it?
No, it got brilliant reviews.
Okay.
But they all said, it's just a parody and a farce.
Yeah.
This will never happen. They said, this is TV taken to an almost cartoonish extreme. We're never going to get there.
Yeah, guess what we're living in? TV taken to an almost cartoonish extreme.
Exactly. And well, not really on topic, but you know what's really funny? Go back and find reviews of Star Wars. When you have no hindsight to look at, when they did not know it was going to be a hit, when the movie right. hadn't even opened yet, when the critics, the Science Fiction Writers of Association critics, got a hold of Star Wars.
Yes.
Negative across the board.
Were you?
Every single review was, there's no story, this is all about special effects. More than one made a Lord of the Rings analogy that this is basically a sci-fi version of the Lord of the Rings movies. Obi-Wan sacrificing himself as Gandalf the White and so forth.
Yes.
And it's just funny reading those totally 100% honest reviews of Star Wars, not knowing that this was going to become the phenomena that it became.
Yeah.
It's really funny going back and reading those magazines from 77 and reading those reviews. Same thing with Blade Runner. Blade Runner, the reviews, negative across the board. John Carpenter's The Thing, negative across the board.
You know what this has taught me?
Not to listen to critics?
Exactly.
Well, but then you also have other things like, and we've talked about this and this movie endlessly, but Videodrome. Videodrome was a visionary film. Other than the physical changing of the bodies, which even then I'm going to argue with a little bit, Videodrome's kind of another soothsayer movie, wasn't it, in 83? People modify their own bodies, and that there was that guy that had an iPod installed in his own arm.
Yeah, we have
in Europe. So people are doing the Videodrome thing of the long live the new flesh bullshit.
You know what?
People are cyborging themselves out, which is creepy.
No, it's not. It's brilliant.
It's fucking creepy.
The only problem with installing an iPod on your arm is that it's Apple, which means that in 2 years your entire arm will be
obsolete,
and therefore you'll have to lop your arm off.
And oh, just I'm sure they can just grow a new one.
That, and it's kind of weird saying I arm.
Sound like a pirate.
Arm. R.
Okay. All right. Well, what were you going to say before I arm?
I was
spilling your coffee. Before
throwing my coffee on the damn desk again.
This is, my God. You are ridiculous here.
I give up.
I don't know. There's nothing to clean it up with unless you want an old sock.
Here, I'll use an old sock. Clean up all kinds of things with an old sock.
But, like, just play the Videodrome trailer. God damn it.
Why would anybody watch a scum show like Videodrome? Why did you watch it, Max? Business reasons. Sure. What about the other reasons?
Is a victim.
I woke up with a headache.
He has been exposed to Videodrome.
I've been hallucinating for a while, ever since...
What?
Since I first saw Videodrome.
His brain is already receiving video images. I think that massive doses of Videodrome signal will ultimately produce and control hallucination to the point that it will change human reality. Soon, his visions will coalesce and become uncontrollable flesh. Videodrome is seducing Max Wren.
Please, come to me now. Come to Nikki.
And Max Wren can do nothing to stop it.
What makes you think I need help? None of our test subjects has returned to normality.
Television can change your mind. Videodrome will change your body. Long live the new flesh. It will shatter your reality. Videodrome, starring Deborah Harry and James Woods. A shocking new vision from the creator of Scanners. Coming soon to a theater near you from Universal Pictures.
It almost didn't come to a theater near you from Universal Pictures either.
Yeah, well.
They almost dropped it for across the board.
And I hate
negative test screening reviews.
I hate to say it, Josh, but Radiodrome has ruined that music.
You can't listen to that, opening of that anymore?
I can't listen to that without expecting it to drop out suddenly and have your voice come in and go, Radiodrome!
Yeah. But as a movie, Videodrome was, again, so far ahead of its time. It seemed like science fiction. And, you know, it was all about someone getting addicted to the signal embedded in a video image.
Right.
You telling me that there are not people that are like that now? Maybe not a physical addiction, but a mental addiction. I mean, like the old lady who cannot miss her stories.
Yeah, I think that there are people that are addicted to TV. I don't think it has anything to do with an embedded signal. I don't think that TV is... they kind of got it right, but they got it more wrong with Videodrome. Because with Videodrome, there's the whole premise is there's that embedded signal that gives you almost direct control over your viewers.
To a degree.
Go to Adam and Eve. Use the code STATIC. Do it now.
Here's the warning part of Videodrome.
Okay, what's the warning?
Media companies have looked into such a signal. They have actually done tests in laboratories in the mid-90s in Canada about trying to get video signals that can control, or not necessarily control, it's the wrong word, influence people's minds. It was all about advertising. It was all about if we have a certain signal that flashes so many times, the brain, it stimulates a certain part of the brain to make you more susceptible to the product being advertised.
Yeah,
that's almost like a Videodrome signal, isn't it?
It's almost there. They discovered that the only problem with that is that if you air a commercial like that, epileptics across the nation also go nuts because it triggers the same thing in the brain. I read the white papers on this stuff because I was like, ooh,
but
neat.
But doesn't that sicken you? Just sicken you on a certain level that they would say, you know what? It's not so much that you don't want our floor cleaner. We are going to make you buy our floor cleaner. We are going to take away your free will to say you do not want this product. That offends me as a human being, Scott.
It's offensive, but I hate to say it, but I almost expect it.
Seriously, watching it, though?
No. But watching, for instance, Max Headroom.
That's the next one I was going to bling up. Blipverts have
you
come
going,
real.
You were going to bling up?
Bling up. I was going to get it all Goldie, motherfucker! We are so racist.
No. But anyway, it's... I like how our brains went to the same place at the same... I don't like how our brains went
I was going
to
say, really?
That's
creepy to me.
Yeah. But anyway, it's... When it comes to Max Headroom, with the Blipverts and everything like that, it had more of a scanner's result of you watch the Blipverts and your head explodes.
That only happened in 6% of the population, and they actually considered that an acceptable loss for the profit in the pilot. So that was supposed to be just how cold a network is, that's okay. But then Max Headroom also had the video signal thing in the episode Wackets.
Yeah.
Where you can't stop watching it. Your brain gets addicted to it. It releases endorphins in your brain just like a drug does. And if you stop watching the Wackets TV show, you go through withdrawal symptoms. So you have to watch Wackets.
That's exactly what they were working on in Canada with the research.
It was basically Wackets, yeah. And again, when Max Headroom did it in 1987, they went, that's not a warning. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they said, wow, some science fiction writer came up with this? Why didn't our R&D team?
Exactly.
We pay them.
And they found out that Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't really work. Not well, anyway.
Not well as it did in the Max Headroom episode, but that was also 20 minutes into the future. Don't look at me like that. But then you've also got Blipverts. Blipverts have become real.
Yeah, they have.
Don't you? You and I were still working at 26. It's still in the era where they had that shitty ass smelly couch in the studio. So that would make it 08, maybe?
Yeah. 08, early 2008.
I think it was when Chuck first premiered, or was Chuck before that?
I don't remember.
But because I remember one of the things that they were doing was promos for Chuck.
Right, right.
And what they would do is you'd just see these little, it would just be like a whoosh, and that was it for the ad for Chuck. And you'd be like, oh, okay, what the hell was that? But your brain expanded that little flash frame. And what Blipverts were in the Max Headroom episode was a 30-second ad compressed down to 3 seconds, which would only take 3 seconds to air, but it would expand to 30 seconds in your brain. And it had a slight side effect of making some people's heads explode. But, you know, only 6% of the population. And NBC was doing those. They weren't doing the expanding thing, but they were playing on your subconscious. You saw the ad, and it just... And that was it. But your brain still got it.
Nope.
Subconsciously.
No. It didn't work.
But...
And I'm,
they tried it. They tried Blipverts.
They tried it, but looking back and some research was done, and it didn't work. What worked was it made people curious. What the hell was that? So welcome to the age of the DVR. They stop, they go back, and they frame by frame it.
But it still doesn't worry you that Blipverts were tried?
Nah.
What worries you when it comes to technology then? You don't seem to be worried about any of this stuff that we're getting warned about.
I'm not.
Why? Because I'm not being a smartass. Explain this to me. Why you're not afraid of them doing this?
I'm an optimist. I'm also realistic enough to tell you that with enough research into the subconscious that they've done and everything like that, these Blipverts don't work. They get people curious. People go back. They frame by frame them. They talk about them online. They work in that fashion. They don't work as in we're going right into your brain and giving you a desire for this product.
The Futurama brain dream commercials.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Exactly. And it doesn't work that way. The what was the Batman with the Riddler in it?
The movie or the
movie.
Batman Forever.
Batman Forever. Thank
you. That was the one with Val Kilmer.
Yeah. And he had that blender-looking thing that would go right into your brain and give you the 3D world and stuff like that. Something like that would worry me. Something that worked like that would worry me. Currently, we can't do that. Currently, when you start interfacing between the real world and the brain directly, things get really strange because we don't quite understand the brain
enough
yet. And, you know, then you get your philosophers that step in and go, well, if you can manipulate the brain and it seems real enough to the brain, then what is real and blah, 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 blah. But I'm an optimist. I really am, and especially when it comes to technology. I know you're not. You're not at all. So when I see the implants... When I see this stuff that comes along so far, I'm actually pretty optimistic about it, simply because we don't have the ability for an evil corporation to directly and via implant or brain or you know, direct brain interface, they don't have the ability to change you yet. What frightens me is if they do come out with that technology that really blurs the line to, you know, if I'm walking down the street and I suddenly get a desire to go buy
Starbucks or whatever.
Buondo. It's my fix-all product. Buondo is.
I thought it was some weird
I suddenly get a huge desire to go buy Buondo. And all of a sudden I look at, let's say I'm walking through Times Square and I look up and every ad is an ad for Blondo that says you want Blondo. Well, maybe that's somebody at Blondo directly interfacing with my brain going, okay, let's change his real world.
Or the aliens from Branded.
There you go. You know, that would worry me. But currently, and at least from what I can see for at least the foreseeable future, certainly my lifetime, then that's not going to happen.
All right. How about something like They Live? Obviously, taking out the alien angle, because we're not on Coast to Coast AM. So take out the alien angle. But something about the embedded TV signal that you're actually so used to it when you don't have it, you start going through withdrawals. Because remember, when the resistance would interrupt the They Live signal, people would start getting headaches because their brains, their entire lives, they've grown up with that signal. So it's like they're missing like oxygen or, you know, something that that the body thinks it needs to live.
When I say the color of caution, what color comes to your brain?
The color of caution. I've never
The color of caution. If I say caution, what color comes to mind?
Yellow and black.
There you go. What if I say cold? What color comes to mind?
Blue.
Hot?
Red.
Okay. Female?
Sexy?
No. colors only here.
Caucasian? I don't know.
No. Female.
That's a color?
I know.
Kind of,
sort of. But female versus male, I was thinking pink and blue.
Oh, okay. I'm picturing an actual female, not like the esoteric definition. You didn't describe that one well.
But anyway, you have lived your entire life with these colors associated with these things. Red is hot, blue is cold, yellow and black means be careful. What color is an ambulance?
White and red.
There you go. If you ask an English person that, they're going to say green and yellow.
I'm thinking of France as like blue and black.
Yeah, France is like blue and black. But you ask people from different countries what color is an ambulance, they're going to come up with different colors. But these are associations that we have lived with for our entire lives. And if we take them away, yeah, I'll be confused for a little while. For instance, when I went down to Brazil, their hot and cold are on the opposite side of ours. Or not Brazil, Australia.
Okay.
The hot is on the right, the cold is on the left.
So you burned yourself the first time you tried to wash your hands?
Yes. You know, their toilets
also flush backwards.
It took a long while for me to get used to the switch. And so, yeah, but that's... We are so adaptable that let's say that there is an alien conspiracy a la They Live and it's all in and, you know, you block this. Yeah, you're going to get a headache for a little while, but you're going to adapt very, very quickly.
See, I'm not so sure. I think TV, media, all this stuff is so ingrained into us. It's like that Ray Bradbury story, The Murderer, where a guy realized that his entire day was one giant listen. All he did was listen to everything that's around him. And when he got what he called an island of silence, no noise, nothing, it was scary because he'd never experienced pure silence before. Because... think about it. Now, when I say you, I don't mean you specifically. You, the listener, what do you do? How much media do you consume in a day? When you get up, you turn on the TV to watch the news, or you turn on the radio to listen to the news, or you go on the internet to check your email. You go out to your car, you listen to your iPod, or you turn on the radio. You're deluged with signs and ads on buses, and then you go to the mall, and what happens? And there's music playing, and you go out in public, and other people's music is playing, and people are reading newspapers, and there's TVs on every place you go. You can't escape media.
I even went to
Philip
my gas tank the other day.
There's a fucking TV in the gas pump now. It's creepy, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there was. It
was playing. It was playing a MythBusters when I got my gas.
When I got my gas, it actually popped up and it said, you know, welcome to the Oneida One Stop. Here's your news for the day. And one of the local TV networks had done a quick, like a not even 30 seconds, but a 15 second wrap up of the news.
But my bank does that too. If you use the drive up. My bank has a little, you know, here's today's headlines and the weather and all that. You can't escape all the media around us.
But I have, and I've done this experiment, and I do it every year. And that is when I do my big camping trip, PSG.
Okay.
No radio. Seriously, you park the car, we shut off the radio. No TVs anywhere. Barely, you know, minimal use of electricity, period. And, you know, in those 10 days, number one, my entire fashion sense changes. Takes me about 10 minutes when I get there, to the point that at the end of the week, when I put on blue jeans, it feels really, really strange. I don't miss the media. I'm not deluged with this stuff. I get news sounds. I get people, you know, even at night you get people talking, laughing, snoring, farting, fucking, all kinds of stuff. And behind it all is the drum circle, a constant drum beat. I get back, it takes me a couple days to get used to sleeping without those drums again. It takes me, television to me at the end of this camping trip is shocking. And you know, you've seen me when I come back. For the first few days, I'm noticing every sound, every bit of media that hits me in the face. I'm noticing all of this stuff. But you adapt to that lifestyle and accept it as normal in less than 10 days. And when you come back for less than 10 days, the real world with everything that's going on is very shocking at first. But in less than 10 days, I'm back to normal, Scott.
And see, obviously, you and I like the internet.
Sure.
We both work on the internet.
Yep.
Our show is on the internet. I get the irony of that.
Okay.
But I don't think I have actually seen people, relatives of mine, that say a tornado goes through their area or a hurricane and there's no internet for 4 days. Their teens are actually going through cold turkey withdrawal drug symptoms. I just need to check my email.
It happens.
And it's like, my God, you can operate without email for 4 fucking days.
And that's what I'm saying. It happens at PSG too. Because we have plenty of teens there and even people in their 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s that are addicted. That it does it, and you do go through hell. I go through withdrawals for the first couple of days or so, where I'm just like, I miss my podcasts, I miss Facebook, blah 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 blah. But you adapt, and I think we would adapt whatever technology comes out, or stops or changes. I don't think it would be that big of an influence.
Now, since we started talking about TV shows and movies that were kind of prescient, what about your new favorite show, Revolution?
I hate that show.
I know. I'm setting you up.
That show makes physics weep. And it drives me nuts. It really does. Okay, look, if a jet engine or an airplane engine stops, they don't just stop in midair and fall straight to the
ground.
They're
not a rock.
Yeah, they are not a rock.
If nothing else, you could glide at least partially.
How awesome. Do you know if that did happen, where all the power in the world got shut off?
A giant amp goes off?
A giant EMP goes off and all the power in the world goes blah. Do you know where I'm going? I'm going to Northern Ohio.
Why? Because that's where Steven Spielberg's Aliens from Close Encounters will hit you on the mesa.
Yeah, that always confused me. The great mountainous area of Muncie, Indiana.
Yeah.
named one of our cats Barry after the little boy in that movie, by the way. But anyway, I'm going to Northern Ohio. I'm going to the Amish.
Because they know how to live without all this shit?
I'm going to show up and I'm going to be like, hi, I'm weak and stupid. Can you teach me how to grow stuff? You know, can you teach me how to live? And yeah, I love God too. Okay.
Sure,
whatever. Just please. You know, but no, I'm going to the Amish and I'm going to be like, hi, the English world is fucked and you guys are like superheroes. Yeah, the inbreeding, not really cool. But can you at least teach me how to run a little farm?
And see, I think we are too addicted to our technology. And yes, I also get the irony that, like, I'm a video collector and I'm a huge movie buff and things like that. Clearly, I like movies and video games and things. So smartassers don't need to point that out in the comments. On the other hand, if I had to, I could live without them. I know people that I don't think could live without movies, internet, and video games. And I think they would rather die.
And you know what? And I'll tell you the truth. If they were all taken away, yes, they would.
Probably
and that's
die.
Part of adapting. As a human race, there will be losses.
The way I look at it, I think we're too dependent on technology. And then we had all these movies that, ironically enough, using that technology, were trying to warn us about our ridiculous dependence on technology. And we just said, fuck that.
Yeah.
I just want to see boobies.
That's pretty much where I'm at. But the thing is, you say fuck that to the warnings. But the reason I'm so optimistic is because I know how quickly that humans will survive. We've survived ice ages. We've survived horrible, horrible things that we've done to ourselves or that nature has done to us over the course of our history. We are like, we are like planetary crotch crickets. We are really difficult to get rid of.
Crotch crickets?
Yeah.
That's the word you're going with?
That's the word I'm going with.
Two words, actually, phrase?
As opposed to crabs or fleas or cockroaches or anything else that's really difficult to get rid of if it gets into your house.
Well, all right, how about a, not so much the movie adaptation, let's go with the actual book adaptation or the original book. How about something like Fahrenheit 451, which was trying to be a treatise on how bad censorship can be and how totalitarianism is not the way to go. And then the book gets banned and censored by the totalitarian governments that it was warning against.
Well, of course it's going to get banned and censored by the governments it was warning against. It was warning against those governments and they don't want their people rebelling.
But even in America, the book was censored. The book was banned in places.
Yeah.
And it was a warning about how America should not become like this.
Yes.
And then the book that's warning you about that, it's almost like you're saying, I don't want no warning. Just let it happen. That scares me.
No. No. I think you're wrong because at least in the U.S. you can't. We talked about this in the band thing. Nowadays, you can't stop this information from getting out there. And I think
nowadays, no, but right. In 1965,
I don't think you could stop it then either. There will always be an underground and black market trade of information. But with it being a warning on censorship, there's to me, there's a big difference between warning against technological futures that you can't really predict, Looker and Videodrome to an extent did a pretty good job. But there's a difference between trying to warn against an eventual outcome of a technology versus an eventual outcome of an idea. You can warn against censorship. You can warn against totalitarianism. These are bad ideas. It's really hard to look at the Blondo machine and say this Blondo machine is eventually going to become the T-1000.
But don't you think if those ideas were bad, and I agree that they are, why do people keep going back to them?
What do you mean, why do people keep going back to them?
Because they're clearly bad ideas. Something like censorship is clearly a bad idea. Yet how many times do you see someone like Tipper Gore going, I'm not a censor, but I don't think people should be able to buy that on their own free will?
I've never said people were smart. And to tell you the truth, when you get somebody with that much influence, that's a group of people going, I don't want to think no more.
I like how you went Southern with that.
Look at the politics of the South. I'm not picking on Southerners. There are some very brilliant people out there. We go to Atlanta sometime. There are some brilliant Southerners out there, and just because you talk like this does not mean that you automatically lose 50 IQ points or anything.
You sound like you do.
No. The right Southerner, trust me, there's a big difference between the local yokel that talks like this and a proper Southerner. A proper
to me, they all sound like Larry the Cable Guy to me.
Yeah, I know. That's because you're an unexposed idiot. But the thing is, idiots, there are a whole lot of people, and here's the idea that we need to warn against. You want to know what scares me when it comes to technology? You want to know what scares me when it comes to the future? And you want to know where I stop being optimistic and start shitting my pants a little bit? Is when you see entire populations who simply go, I don't want to think anymore. I'm going to leave this up to somebody. That's how you get totalitarian governments. That's how you get North Korea.
Now, I'm not trying to make a pun here, and I'm not trying to be funny, but isn't that basically what, like, the Tea Party is? I don't want to think anymore, so I'm going to let the leader of the Tea Party decide what I like, what I don't like.
I don't know. I really don't. I don't think that American political parties, regardless of how radical, are quite there yet, because we haven't had, I mean, a lot of people look at Obama and say, look at how he rose to power and everybody gave it to him, but that's because he actually sounded intelligent compared to his competition.
He had competition?
He did.
Imagine that.
But, and he does now, and it scares me. But when you have people simply going, and I hear this from you. I hear this from my friend Teresa, who refuses to vote. I hear this from people who simply go, I just want to go to my job. I just want to do my day-to-day thing, and I just want to survive. I don't really care.
Except you don't hear that from me. I give a shit.
I know, but every once in a while, you're just like, man, I just want to make a living.
Every now and then, you just get beaten down to the point where it's like, next week, I'll care.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. That's what frightens me. When people go, this stuff that's across the nation and everything, this doesn't affect me. I just want to go to work and get my paycheck and come home and be able to afford my house and my Wii and my TV. And see,
that's the kind of apathy like that allows totalitarians to get into power.
Exactly. You've got two roads of power for totalitarian governments.
A coup and apathy.
No. The coup rarely permanently works. But if you want to go in nonviolently, you make people apathetic. Or you make yourself a savior. Germany, 1938-39. The rise of Adolf Hitler. He was seen as a savior to the German race because he spoke directly to the worker and said, if you put me into power, I am going to make this country so great that all you will have to do is go to work and you'll get a really good paycheck and you can afford that house and you can afford that dream and you can afford to travel.
And unfortunately, people are so stupid, Germans, they don't do the math and see that's not a sustainable system.
Yeah, and Germans will be, you know, respected worldwide, and we will rise to power, and we'll kill all the Jews. And, you know, we'll kill all the Jews and all the blacks and all the gays, and we will create this master race. And it was that kind of charm that gave, you know, your two roads to legitimate totalitarian power that is lasting and would last until somebody else intervenes is apathy and hope. That's what scared me about Obama the first time. That whole hope picture.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh boy.
Not good, not good. Not good, not good.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh no.
Well, because like what it comes down to, when this airs, we're obviously recording this early. When this airs, the election is like 2 or 3 days away. The thing that it comes down to is, and I've heard this from a lot of people, a few that are probably serious about it, that if Romney gets into power, they're moving to Canada. And I'm saying, I won't. You know why? You can't fight the good fight from Canada. You have to be here to fight the good fight.
Exactly. If Romney gets elected, I'm staying here. I'm moving to Washington.
Because it's like, if Romney gets elected, I'm probably going to get a second political show so I can just take on all the stupid shit about Romney.
Exactly. And we've gone way off topic, but I like...
Well, we kind of diverged, but it's still related. But I like
that question. You're like, Scott, you're the eternal optimist. What worries you?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I seriously am worried about, like Looker, the computer making the images. You know, I mean, in Looker, it's a little different where they just scan them, and then the computer does all the work. Where now, you know, we still have technicians today, as you and I have argued about endlessly.
See, computers don't make mistakes. They don't. Humans make mistakes and embed them in the computer.
I think Skynet would argue with you.
No. And I'm dead serious. Computers don't make mistakes. Programmers make mistakes. I have more faith in a computer than I do in a human being.
I don't. I will never, never trust a computer more than I trust a human. Ever. And I think that's where the big divide between you and I is.
Yeah. My computer doesn't lie to me. It doesn't cheat on me. It doesn't...
You've never been playing a game against the computer, and as soon as you start doing really good, all of a sudden all the random luck goes against you. Like the computer's not cheating. Like the computer's not going, oh no, you're not beating me, motherfucker.
But that's not the computer cheating. That's the programmer of the game being bad. In racing games, they call it rubber banding. You get way out ahead of the pack, and all of a sudden, boing, and boom, the cars are right behind you. That's called rubber banding. That's bad programming. That I blame the programmer. I blame the makers of the game. I don't. The Xbox is just doing what the Xbox does. My laptop is just doing what the laptop does.
And see, I will never look at it like that. I will never look at it. I think, and I'm not going so far as to saying sentience in machines, but I think there is a certain. You get to a certain point where the computer starts extrapolating what it's been programmed with and what it's learned. And I do believe computers can learn legitimately what that word means. And they kind of come up with their own extrapolation of what they think the programmer would want to have happened in a given situation.
And to me, it's a machine. You program it, it does what it's programmed to do. And I've made mistakes in programs plenty of times and had the computer come back and go syntax error here or, you know, exception here. And it's just doing what it's told to do. It can't make up its mind to hate you.
I think my Audacity program that I edit with does. Every time I have Charlie McMullen on either Lost in the Static, Radiodrome, or What the Fuck, halfway through editing the episode, Audacity crashes. Only does it on an episode Charlie's on. No. It doesn't like Charlie.
Josh, it's not that the program doesn't like Charlie. Charlie is that powerful of an individual that he is actually forcing that program to the sheer awesomeness.
The only time Audacity ever crashes is in an episode Charlie's in. It's fucking creepy.
That's coincidence.
It's a creepy coincidence, trying to be funny,
but it's coincidence.
But, yeah, it was, okay. Go to adamandeve.com, go to 1201beyond.com, use the Amazon links, and As long as you're going to shop at Amazon anyway, and you know,
we may as well give us a cut, and we could use it. And again, Adam and Eve is back. Don't do the little $5 order and then order for your grandma and then order for blah. We appreciate you helping the show like that, but it doesn't work like that anymore for us. So get something.
We get a percentage of what is spent. So right. Make a big order. If you're going to order it, do it all at once,
yeah.
Dude. Don't manipulate the system. That's how we got in trouble the first time.
Yeah. So I appreciate you guys joining us. What makes you guys optimistic about the future? What makes you pessimistic?
LostInStaticShow@gmail.com.
We will see you next time we're on. Goodbye, everybody.